All right, don't hit it too hard. So welcome one and all, and welcome to those of you who've been here before and are back again. Thank you for joining us. Those who are perhaps new to us, a very special welcome to the Organization Design Forum's community conversation format. And we get together a couple times a month like this just to talk about really interesting ideas with really interesting people. Today, I'm delighted to have a colleague of mine. I first met Al, and I do call her Al because Alessandria is just, it's such a beautiful name, and I should use it more, but I'm just lazy. but Al and I met through a mutual friend. Al has been a senior HR business partner in a number of firms and is an experienced executive who, after several years of being at the very heart of the rat race, decided that it was getting to her. And I'm putting words in your mouth here, Al. You can clarify things later for people. But she found herself at one point realizing, I'm getting burned out, and I can't find really good resources for how to deal with this. And started to look into this, and has a particular focus on how stress and psychological safety, how they show up in the lives of HR people, but more generally has done a lot of research looking at what we can do in the workplace in general to mm-hmm. make it a better place to be healthy mentally and emotionally. So all that said, delighted to have Al with us today. Al, I'm going to turn it over to you to start telling us the story and getting us involved in some conversations.
Absolutely. Thank you, Carlos. Very well done, given that you didn't have notes. So applaud that. So my name is Dr. Alessandria Polizzi. I do go by Al. I rebooted my consulting practice in early 2021 to focus on mental health at work. And we work on psychological health and safety, which is a lot of what I'm going to talk about today. I'm fortunate enough to have affiliates from around the globe who are also certified on our program. And so they make this all worthwhile. I love having a community. So our focus today is going to be on three things. I'm going to share new perspectives that are evolving in the world of work around mental health at work and workplace mental health. I'll give you a little bit of context around that, but we're going to spend a lot of time talking about organizational design and the impact that it can have on the mental health of our employees, and also how the mental health of our employees can impact the implementation of our organizational design. And so I share that after having been in talent development and organizational effectiveness for 20 years. And so, you know, as a practitioner myself, but also as somebody who focuses now on the health and safety of our employees. And then I'll share some tips on how to get started. Sound okay? All right. So the first thing I want to bust is a lot of people think that psychological safety and looking at the humans in our workplace is new. Actually, looking at the humans in our workplace, as we know, has been around for a very long time. The concept of paying attention to the human-centric needs of our employees is not a new concept. It's been around for over 100 years. I love this research study that Mary Van Cleek did. She looked at a flour factory in 1925 that had changed hands from one management team to the other. And she was looking at how was it that the new management team was able to have such a much improved performance from the same people. And what she noticed was these specific things as a differentiator between the prior owners and the new owners and the changes that they made. And so what you'll see is this is pretty much at the heart of what we're going to learn about when it comes to what are called psychosocial hazards in the workplace. So most of us know psychological safety from Amy Edmondson's work or the work done by Google in 2015 when they looked at their workplace to identify what differentiates high-performing teams from other teams. And they identified psychological safety as the behaviors that made those teams better able to perform. And there's been a ton of psychological research on this as well. But let me ask this group of experts in the chat, when have you done your best work? Go ahead and pop that in the chat. Let's see what we have. Don't be shy. So, Carlos, when have you done your best work?
When I've had enough sleep. Right, when I haven't overcommitted myself because I feel like I'm obliged to do all sorts of things. I'm not sure how that relates here, and maybe
it absolutely relates. We're going to talk about workload. Okay, so that is a psychosocial hazard. So here we have some folks in the chat. When I'm rested and relatively unstressed, best work done in an environment of high trust. Absolutely. Autonomy to problem solve and collaborate. Collaborate, I'm going to give you the data that's going to prove that that's absolutely true, Lisa. So collaboration is a huge one that helps improve our mental health at work. Feeling part of a team. Clear expectations. Yes, Shiraz. All of these are psychosocial hazards when in their absence, and they impact our mental health. Feeling appreciated, able to pursue my ideas, clear vision. All of these things tie back to what we're talking about, which is having a psychologically healthy workplace. So for those of you who know ISO, ISO is the International Organization for Standardization. They started in World War II, doing standardization around things like equipment and building supplies, because between the UK, Australia, different parts of the world, they weren't the same. So you order a number two and you get a bunch of different things. So from there, they've done supply chain, total quality management, et cetera. Well, one of the technical committees they have is around occupational health and safety. I'm actually the global liaison between, it's the Fearless, I think it's called, yeah, the Fearless Organization, Carrie. That's Amy Edmondson. And you can also see Amy Edmondson on, she has a great TED Talk. So ISO has an Occupational Health and Safety Committee. I'm the global liaison between HR and health and safety for ISO, because I was so excited when this came out. So what is this? This is the ISO 45003. It is the global guideline for psychological health and safety in workplaces. This is considered the global standard for implementing psychological health and safety within work as part of your health and safety strategy. So this takes what had always been there, which is looking at the health, physical health, but also the mental health of our employees. And it gives us guidelines. This fall, just this last fall, the World Health Organization also published guidelines. They align very nicely with the ISO, in concert with the International Labor Organization, or ILO. And they have guidelines for workplace mental health. Additionally, about 2 weeks later, our own Surgeon General came out with our own guidelines and framework for workplace mental health. So you're seeing a pattern here. There's starting to be a rapid increase in attention to mental health at work. And what's important to mention here is we're talking about mental health in the same way we talk about physical health. This isn't talking about supporting people in crisis. This is talking about looking at the psychological health of our workers, because we know all the things you just listed, that's where we get high performance and people do their best work. So this is a quote from the WHO's guidelines, where they say, meaningful work is protective for our mental health. When I have work to do that I find meaningful, challenging in the right way, it helps me leverage my strengths. It is protective to my mental health. It helps me navigate challenges in a more effective and sustainable way. And the opposite is true. Poor working conditions, and it's not just physical working conditions, we'll talk about what those conditions are in a second, can deteriorate my mental health. So did the WHO classify burnout as a disease spark this trend of guidelines with so many government? No. The slides aren't advancing. Well, let's see. Does it say how?
No, we're on when have you.
Oh, okay.
We're still on that slide. We haven't seen.
Interesting. Never had that happen before. Let's try this again. But now.
There it is.
Perfect. Hold on. I don't want to give too much away, but there will be a video later, and I want to make sure you can actually hear it. Okay, here we go. So burnout, Just the comment on burnout. Burnout's been around since the 60s. There's articles about HR burnout from 1992. So this isn't, burnout isn't new, by the way. So but curious from the group, why do you think, or how do you think poor working conditions would impact our mental health or deteriorate our mental health?
I have a question, Al, in that you include less than optimal management and leadership, lack of clarity about direction, that all that sort of stuff is included in poor working
conditions. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep. Causes stress, causes frustration. Yeah. High levels of ongoing stress. I had this great video from the CDC from the 80s where they talk about all of this. Right. So we've been talking about this for decades. Oh, toxicity in politics. I'm going to get into that. It's confusing. It's unhelpful. It chips away at your view of your worth and diminishes confidence. Thank you, Lizette. When we're triggered at work, we bring it to other parts of our family. Absolutely. And what it does is it creates high risk for the business. So this study from Mercer Marsh that looks at risks due to people within businesses, they call out mental health as the biggest blind spot for businesses as we head into 2023. Because mental health, not just issues, but paying attention to the mental health needs of our workforce is critical to the performance of the business. And that's the same thing you see from World Health Organization. It's the same thing you see from ISO. All right. So, why is that? Well, a lot of it, when we talk about psychological health, we talk of, you can experience psychological health through the behaviors of psychological safety. And so that's how that shows up in a behavioral way. And so this is how I define psychological safety. And it's based on the Google six dimensions of a psychologically safe workplace. So that is, we will be able to be ourselves, take risks, disagree, make mistakes, raise problems, and ask questions without having a negative impact or putting our jobs at risk. Okay. So that's essentially what it is. I have a video here. A professor from Alabama, she articulated this pretty well in one of our roundtables.
Psychological safety doesn't mean it's never scary to raise a counterpoint or speak up, right? So it just means that you don't believe that the people around you will automatically reassess their value or interpretation of who you are as a person. You know, it's the ability to speak up, knowing that the basic assumption that others have about who you are remains intact. Meaning, if my basic assumption about you is that you are genuinely a decent person who is a team player, is trying to do the right thing, and is genuinely trying to understand and move our organization forward, then you might make a comment here or there, suggest an idea that's a little off the wall, or maybe it's not really accurate, and I'm not reevaluating that basic assumption of you. And I think that's really at the heart of what psychological safety is.
So said simply, it's high friction on ideas, smoothness on people, right? So we trust each other enough to be able to do the hard things. And that's where psychological safety shows up. So why does it matter? I'm just gonna give a couple of data points. There are a ton of them. I have a bunch of them on my website, which I can point you to. But I think when I'm thinking about the work that we do here in organizational design, when we make changes to an organization, we need people to move along with those changes, right? The changes don't work if people don't make the change, right? And so if we look at psychological safety, people are 67% more likely to apply new skills to their job when they feel psychologically safe. Why do you think that might be? Who wants to come off mute and help us figure out why would people be more likely to 67% more likely?
I'll speak. I think the likelihood is that you're not going to be have any repercussions of sharing something new, that there is, you know, that friction that you're talking about is probably, you know, lessened because they have the ability to speak up and talk about those new ideas and that opportunity to share.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Also, what happens when we try a new skill? We mess stuff up. We make mistakes, right? If I'm not afraid of making mistakes or looking a fool, then I'm going to be more likely to try those new skills. Thank you, Diamond, for that. I love that. I can also share ideas on how to make this better, right? How this is working. Higher performance, higher learning behaviors when I feel psychologically safe. So we're going to do a quick light assessment, very light. So pull a pen and a piece of paper, 10 questions, I think. Evaluating how safe your organization is in. Now, if you're a consultant and you don't have one, think about an organization, a client that you're working with, okay? But let's just take a step back. How does this apply to the work and the world in which we reside? So on a 1 to 5 scale, how often versus never are we too busy for people to take breaks? We have meetings before the meeting. Oh, you can keep, Jennifer, you can write them down and add them all up for me. We have meetings before the meeting to manage the politics of decisions. We make organizational changes, including position eliminations. I would say that that's probably high given the work that we do. We have a highly competitive culture. We are too busy to train leaders properly. The amount of work expected from employees is unrealistic. Some roles in the organization overlap in responsibility. Employees are not given the decision-making authority needed to perform well. We seem to be under-resourced for the work that needs to be done. We have roles that require working at night or at unpredictable hours. We work at a very fast pace. Work tends to be reactive. Roles within the organization lack variety in the tasks that they do. Okay, add them up. Pay attention to any question they had a 5. So the thing that we do in the mental health at workspace is we aren't about necessarily removing hazards, because some hazards are always going to exist. And I'll show you some of those in a second. It's about understanding the level of risk that those hazards bring to the organization and how we can mitigate the negative impact that that has on the mental health of our employees. So for example, one in there said we make organizational changes. Well, some of that is not preventable, right? So I know, however, that that has a negative impact on the mental health of our employees. So how am I planning for that? So this is more about raising awareness. If you don't mind, put your total in the chat. Let's see where we all landed. If you don't pay attention to those hazards and try to mitigate those risks, then you run the risk of having high burnout, high turnover, et cetera. Okay, we got some high numbers here. Okay, great. Good. So this just gives you context to kind of where you're starting from. Again, this is a high level assessment, not the in-depth. We do full audits of psychological health and safety based on the global guidelines. This is just a subset.
In some point of the history of labor, of industry, we forgot that there are human beings working at the factories. We forgot, I don't know why, because maybe we need to be very productive back then, and we treat us like machines, and still we do. So I think that this challenge that we have right now is to humanize the industry, to bring back that aware that we are human beings, that we have we have feelings, we have emotions, we have all this, and obviously we can create something different.
So Claudio is in Mexico, and he works with organizations because Mexico has a national requirement to evaluate the psychosocial hazards in your company every 2 years. Canada also has a national requirement to manage the psychological safety, psychological health and safety of your organization. So our neighbors to the north and south have national guidelines. This is coming. Okay, they have it in Australia, they have it in Canada, they have it in Mexico. I even actually saw something from the UAE where they're going to be implementing this by 2030. All right, so what are we talking about? So how I think about psychological safety, when I look at all of these guidelines, WHO, ILO, ISO, et cetera, Canada's guidelines, it really falls into these buckets, right? I think about these three things. I call it C, the structures in the business, which is going to be right in the heart of what we all do, the environmental impacts that we need to be aware of and plan for, and then the expectations of behavior. Now, those expectations of behavior fall more in the psychological safety, but the psychological health is looking at what are some of the other things that may impact how the mental health at work. So here are some of the more common categories, according to WHO and ISO, of ways in what are called psychosocial hazards, or those areas that can negatively impact the mental health of our employees. So I'm going to go through each of these in a little more detail. One is design, obviously of interest to this group. So if you look at the ISO guidelines or you look at WHO, they go through this in a lot more detail. But there are specific studies that show when these things happen, the likelihood of burnout and mental stress increases exponentially. And so paying attention to this as we come up with the design of our organizations is part of making sure that the humans, not the machines, in those roles can thrive. Now, again, some of this we can't control, right? I can't control that someone has to work in a remote office, or I can't control that maybe, you know, the lack of variety because we need someone just to do the thing over and over again. But what I can do is be aware that this is a risk and try to mitigate it as much as possible. So let me give you an example. Has anybody heard of bore out? If you've heard of bore out, go ahead and put an exclamation point for me in the chat. Okay, we got Genevieve. Thank you. Okay, not as well known as burnout, right? So bore out is when, I've had it. I thought I reached the end of the internet. It was like not very helpful for my mental health when I was in the job that was way underutilized. So in France, actually, they have a national requirement. Somebody actually sued and won a big case, because a bore out case against their employer. So France has a standard around this. So bore out are things like insufficient workload. I don't have enough stuff to do. I'm understimulated. I feel guilty because I don't do enough work that's meaningful or useful. And it doesn't align with my personal values. Misalignment with personal values is a huge risk when it comes to burnout. So these are some of the reasons why it can be a problem. Let me give you some data, okay? This study looked at between burnout and bore out, okay? And they saw that chronic fatigue was higher for bore out and psychological well-being was lower for bore out. So even though burnout has a negative impact on our mental health and on our that was me in the job I left. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you both of you. That overwork and underwork are risks to our mental health and well-being. Everybody with me so far? Can I get a thumbs up? Thank you. All right, collaboration. One of you mentioned collaboration was when you did well. There's a reason for that. This study just came out this year, so within the last month, that looked at when we have collaboration, the higher the collaboration goes, the lower our psychological stress. We are tribal people. We like to work with others, especially in a safe way. Okay. So this collaboration, building in collaboration, when we look at organizational design, needs to be part of how is this person going to interact with other humans. So that's design. Or the next one is load and pace. I think, Carlos, you talked about being overworked, right? Unsustainable workloads, extreme pressure, unrealistic deadlines, how machines are paced on the shop floor. All of these things can increase the risk of burnout and create undue and unnecessary stress. There are other hazards, again, not necessarily controllable, but working overnight is actually called a suicide shift because of the mental health impact it can have in having your sleep disrupted in that way. Inflexible schedules that don't allow you to live your life or go to the doctor. I mean, think about the with the trains that happened, I think in the fall where they had the strike. It was because they could never take time off to take care of themselves. Unsociable time, not being able to connect with people, unpredictable schedule, all of these are things that can create mental stress. And then cultural things. Now, some of these are so obvious, right? Bullying, toxic behavior, discrimination. Of course, that's going to impact my mental health. Of course, that's going to bother me. But we also have been, many of us, raised in a world where we were told it's not personal, it's business. What we know is we have just the one brain, okay? That brain is going to absorb stress no matter where it occurs. It doesn't matter that it happened during these hours of the day. If somebody treats me in a way that I find is discriminating, that's going to have a damage on my mental health, period, full stop. But another way in which our culture can be toxic is having frequent org changes, feeling like you don't know what's happening next, having high competition for the same resources, scarce resources when people are fighting over who gets the money, politics and bureaucracy. All of these things we see as being dysfunctional. They're not effective. Some executives try to put them in place because that's how they got where they are, but it's unproductive to the humans in the workplace. So curious, how many of these have you encountered? If you said, okay, how many of these have I seen in the workplaces I've been? There's 12 of them. So I'm just curious how many of these you've seen as issues. Far too many. Thank you, Kevin. And again, to Claudia's point, we have humans working in the workplace. We should make a workplace where humans can do well. Right. So what we're doing is understanding the wiring and machinery of the human to make the human performed at its best, because that's often our biggest investment from a business perspective. It's like making a huge capital investment in a system and then never maintaining it. Okay, so let's talk about role in the organization. This is one of my favorite ones, actually, because role ambiguity, and we know this, right? For those of us who design organizations to create efficiency, effectiveness, and performance, some of this sloppiness when it comes to organizational design, well, it's not just inefficient, it's not healthy. But my favorite one here is the last one, which is the responsibility for other people. Research shows that leading others is one of the biggest risks to your mental health. I see you laughing. Why would that be? James.
People are the most difficult resource to manage.
Yes, it's not
what was there yesterday isn't the same today.
Yes, they're messy. It's not possible. Control.
I also think that
that leader is also dealing with all those other environmental dynamics, lack of resources, stress, the multiple management. So they're having to manage the environmental aspect as well as the people dynamics that they're trying to manage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I say this about HR, but I also say this about leaders. Have you heard the quote about Ginger Rogers? It's an Ann Richards quote. She says, Ginger Rogers did the same moves as Fred Astaire, but backwards and in heels. That's the leader, right? That's the HR person who is having to lead the charge for others while still experiencing the stressors themselves. But there are also a ton of studies on specific stressors that come with the weight of being responsible for other people. Let me share a few of those with you. One is loneliness. Now, I actually talked to a gentleman on my podcast who did a big study. He's like the specialist on leadership loneliness. And I have this great quote from him on there where he talks about how when you move from being an individual contributor, part of the team, to being the leader of it, you just took away the thing I was really good at and enjoyed and put me in a role that I may or may not excel at. And often with zero training, right? So that's very lonely. I can't vent to my team. I can maybe seek some guidance, but if I don't know what to do, I don't want to look like I'm in over my head. Leadership loneliness is a huge risk to mental health. Always being on. I remember this when I was first promoted, little junior manager, walking to my first meeting with the team, and I realized I will never walk into a meeting again where I can just show up. I'm going to have to prepare, know what I'm going to say, be ready to go. Like, I have to be on all the time. And that is emotionally exhausting. Getting feedback and processing feedback from others. Yes, the leadership shadow is exhausting. Absolutely it is. And the studies show this. So getting feedback, I get feedback from this person, and this person, and it's all different. Now what do I do? That stress of getting feedback from everyone and not knowing how to process that, given we all have our own stuff happening, right? That can put us at risk for burnout and exhaustion. And we've seen this play out in the data where we see the level of burnout is higher the higher up you go. And then, of course, pressure to do well for your team, pressure to do well for the company, pressure to do well across the board. That pressure and competition, et cetera, has an emotional weight to it. And so we need to prepare leaders for that and give them the coping skills to, number one, recognize when it's happening and know what to do about it. Yeah, there are no trivial comments as a leader. Absolutely, Molly. Little tidbits on in here. I saw a research study that showed that between 70 to 78% of vice presidents and above have symptoms of mental illness. Because of this. All right, so control. Having control, being able to make, remember Mary Van Cleek talking about the ability to make decisions and being autonomous and being able to make an impact on deciding how I'm going to work and where I'm going to work, schedule flexibility. Look, we hire adults. Adults like to decide what they can do. Okay, so
we just lost her. Al, we don't hear you anymore.
I'm back.
There you are. Wow.
That was weird. I guess Zoom's tired. I don't know.
Yeah, it's stressed out. It's burned out.
I burned it out. It's like, I'm exhausted. You, lady, you exhaust me. Okay. Are we good?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Control over pacing. What we see when we have high self-leadership, we have increased meaningfulness at work. You can connect meaningfulness to a ton of increased outputs, improved citizenship behavior, improved emotional well-being, etc. So when I have that feeling of autonomy and self-leadership, I have better outcomes. They even show this on goal setting. if I set my own goals versus am given goals, I have a higher percentage likelihood of completing those goals and being more motivated by them. All right, so let's talk about, because Carlos asked me about this, one of my clients is a teal organization. So I thought I'd share a little bit with you. When we take self-management all the way, so Holacracies or a teal organization is a self-managed organization. In other words, there are no bosses. Everyone manages their own work. So every performance review is a 360, because there's no 360. It's really it's a flat peer-to-peer. So this was a study that looked at the Holacracies or teal organizations, and you can see the top four most important competencies were related to creating a psychologically safe workplace. I understand my emotions. I'm conscious and self-aware. We have a work climate that's positive, or that can, at least we can be open. I have relationships with my business partners, right, where we connect with each other, and I actually develop myself. Let's talk about another phenomenon that's happening. And there was a huge debate on this about within ISO, just full transparency, about within the HR technical committee on whether or not gig workers should be part of it. But the gig economy is here, okay? And so for some of us, some organizations we work with or the organizations we're in, they use gig workers. And what we know from the research that's been done in the limited time that that's been part of our economy is that anxiety is huge for gig workers. It's the most precarious type of work because it puts people at risk. And in the studies I looked at when it comes to gig workers, there are some specific reasons why. Number one, gig workers actually are highly monitored. You think about your Uber driver, your food delivery person, they're on the app all the time. So they're highly monitored. And as we know, we've seen with organizations that started to put monitoring in with the hybrid workplace, there's a huge detriment to our mental health of our employees when we do that. So monitoring is a risk. Financial precarity, right? Not knowing what's going to happen as far as my money coming in. For many gig workers, they work multiple jobs. They're isolated, they're usually by themselves, and there's no development, there's no career growth, right? So many things to explore when it comes to the mental health of the gig workforce. Somebody mentioned hybrid, so I figured we would, so I wanted to put in some data here about remote worker emotional well-being. So this was a study that looked at what worked well for people who worked remotely. There's a bunch of research on the mental health detriment of working remotely. For example, for many people, looking at ourselves in essentially a mirror all day has a huge mental health stress for us, right? So that's why Zoom added the ability to turn your own camera off, for example. But the one I thought was really interesting to mention as we think about organizational design and effectiveness is this concept of digital readiness. So what they saw were workers who were open to new technologies, willing to try out the avatar, you know, the new things that are coming up, are proactive on tech-focused behaviors, willing to try new ways of communicating and cooperating, and are proactive about it. They tend to have higher emotional well-being. They also need leaders who communicate and are credible. The scale is looking at the amount of emotional well-being, that the increase in it correlates to the higher well-being. Okay, so that's structures. Now let's talk about environment. And the only reason I want to talk about this is because these are the non-controllables that we have to somehow identify and understand the potential risk it'll have on our workers. So some examples might be vendor stability. Now you might think, what does the stability of a vendor have to do with mental health? Well, I've worked in some high supply chain workplace. And when we didn't have the cans that we needed to put the liquid in, the strife and stress between sales and operations was enormous. And that's because the vendor wasn't able to meet our needs. High risk work, high competition for talent, high competition in the marketplace, big stressor, shift timing we've talked about, and external influences. So what do I do about this? I can't control most of this, right? Let me talk about external influences just for a short second. I'll get to it in a little bit as well. But these are things like social unrest, political turmoil, a pandemic, right? Things that aren't controllable. I actually did a session for the Association for Change Management Professionals in the Ukraine. So they're sitting there worrying about their power going off, but they still have to work. And so we can't control that, but what we can do is try to come up with plans to mitigate the risk that that has to their mental health. So what we do first is we identify what's the hazard and what's the likelihood that it will happen. Then we make adjustments where we can, but we also want to educate people on understanding what is happening to them to expect it. So think about if we taught leaders, a new leader, hey, here's some things that might come up for you and here's how to handle it. Think about how much easier it would be for them to take on that new role. All right, here's another one. A lot of companies are looking at something called returnships, which are people coming back from having been unemployed. We had a lot of layoffs that happened in the last couple of weeks. Several are coming up. So there are going to be people who are impacted who will be coming back to work, right? How do we plan for them? Because they are going to have specific mental health needs when they come back to work. Here are some. As I roll out a new organizational structure, as a for instance, the response might be, I don't think I can do this role, right? That probably has nothing to do with whether or not it's the right role or anything like that. It has to do with their background and having self-esteem based on having lost their job. There's a lot of anxiety. They're going to be worried about organizational change. Oh, there's a change. We had a call. I remember after having been through when the telecom bust happened, I was starting a new company and we had an all hands and I thought, uh-oh, someone's being laid off. And it wasn't. It was a positive announcement about a big account they just won. But my brain, because of what I'd been through, was immediately assuming the worst. So that anxiety can make it a distraction for people and they won't be maybe as effective at their job. If they're coming in to an existing team, they can feel out of the loop or unclear about how things are being communicated. So they may need to be communicated in a more frequent and direct way. And again, all of us bring our biases. They're going to bring biases based on their experiences. So if you're making some organizational changes or you're looking at maybe bringing in folks in a returnship, which is fantastic, these are some things to plan for when it comes to their onboarding. Trauma-informed. So this is becoming kind of a popular topic. I'm teaching this at the University of Wisconsin on trauma-informed leadership. The fact is 65% of the US adults have had a traumatic childhood event. That happens while our brains are developing and impacts how we show up in the world later. Okay. Now, beyond childhood events, many traumas have been tied to post-traumatic stress symptoms, including workplace trauma. So let me ask the group, what would be an example of a workplace trauma that I might have to plan for in the future or might impact how I show up at work in the future? Layoffs? Yes, Lindsay. A robbery? Mm-hmm. Sexual harassment? I was just talking to a police department. They had someone die by suicide. The survivors of that's a workplace trauma. Accidents in the factory, absolutely. I also work with a cybersecurity company. And I saw a study that showed that cyber attacks have the same mental health impacts as physical attacks for those in cybersecurity. In fact, 56% of cybersecurity professionals are on the risk of burnout or thinking about leaving the profession. Getting pushed out of a job in a non-explicit way, getting gaslit, bullied, let's just go. We can have all the things, okay? Secondary trauma, if you've seen others harmed, but here's one to watch out for. The World Health Organization says that the biggest threat to our mental health globally is not the pandemic, it's climate change. Because climate change results in multiple natural disasters, extreme weather patterns, resource constraints, et cetera. And so these things impact the mental health of our employees. So there are some things we can do. A lot of it aligns with creating a psychologically healthy workplace, but having a safe workplace, giving people the ability to have choice, to collaborate and partner with others, having autonomy to make decisions. Look familiar?
Many countries around the world have standards and laws relative to how you ensure the psychological and psychosocial safety of employees at work. It's a requirement. We don't have that here. It is still legal to bully people here. It is still legal to mistreat people as long as you don't do it to the wrong person who's involved in protected class activity or in a protected class himself. So our systems are insufficient. And on top of that, we have a kind of an individualistic type of culture that doesn't seem to understand it. And I'm an individualist as well. I really believe in self-sufficiency. There's a lot of things I can do on my own. The challenge is I limit what I can do if it's only on my own. But I feel like I'm very smart. I feel like I'm very capable, blah, blah, blah. But there are some things I have to have other people. I can't build roads by myself. I can't ensure that my air is clean by myself. I'm not my own military. So we need other people for lots of things. And I think sometimes we have these binary choice type perspectives or zero sum focuses, this zero sum game focus that suggests that it has to be this or that. I believe it has to be this and that. I believe that we should have an environment that is physically safe for me, but is also psychologically safe for me.
Good point, Cynthia, about monitoring and measuring the effectiveness. Absolutely. So I mentioned Australia has a national guideline and requirements. This was a campaign they did. OSHA shows that 30%, for example, 30% of muscle strains, which are the biggest most common injury in the workplace, are due to psychological safety or lack of psychological health and safety. These people were physically injured because they were afraid to ask for help. So this is from the WHO. What we've been talking about is preventing mental health issues in the workplace by diminishing the hazards of psychosocial hazards. Then we get into training people on what it is, what to expect, and what do I do about it.
There are all of these things which have...
Before Susanna talks. As I said, last quarter, there were a ton of new guidelines coming out between the UAE, our own Surgeon General, the WHO and ILO. Susanna was involved in the WHO. But you can see that the conversation about mental health at work, it is changing. And so I think as we think about what does that mean for the organizations we support, I just loved Susanna's point of view. Like I said, she helped with the ILO and the WHO on their guidelines.
There are all of these things which have brought us to a situation which is completely unsustainable. And what I think is that we are at the threshold of a really massive shift. It's almost like an industrial revolution. For me, that the we have to take psychosocial well-being seriously.
So hopefully with this, you have some information to start taking this seriously in case you didn't weren't aware before. Now you are. Here are some ways to get started. Raise awareness about what workplace mental health is and is not. Identify those hazards and risks that happen. Equip leaders with the skills and resources to help their teams and help themselves. And here's my last pitch. As Carlos mentioned, I do focus a lot on our people and making sure that we're taking care of ourselves. right? When we have to implement changes that have a negative impact on the humans that we work with, we can experience secondary trauma. We can experience compassion fatigue, et cetera. So being responsible for other people's comes with a weight to take care of yourself and make sure that you're monitoring your own hazards. All right. With that, let me open up for any questions. If you'd like to connect with me, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm also on TikTok, where I post under the name of your HR big sister. And I'm happy to take any questions or comments.
Hi, Alessandria. Very nice to meet you. Great session. One of the companies that I used to work for did talk a lot about let's address the issue, not the people, and really let's attack that. But often people felt personally attacked rather than just addressing the issue. So, you know, that's a skill. And so I guess the question is like, how are you, or how can we help people kind of focus on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Cynthia. So that's actually a skill that we teach. We never teach people how to navigate these challenging and difficult conversations. And so in the WHO, they talk about training as the most resiliency training specifically as the biggest correlation to better outcomes of any other action you can take. So what does that mean? That means helping people understand when their biases are getting in the way, when they're, you know, over-interpreting, how to navigate those feelings and challenges. So that's one of the things that the WHO recommends. That's the service that we provide as an example, because I don't think we don't really do a good job of helping equip people on how to navigate those big emotions and difficulties.
So I want to put something out there. This has been on my mind since I've been preparing for this. It seems to me, I'm going to make a proposition. It seems to me that hierarchies are inherently psychologically unsafe. That as soon as there's a distribution of power that is unequal, and I'm thinking about Barry Oshry's work here about tops, middles, and bottoms, that we will default, if we are not extremely intentional about it, into a place where power can be abused, make it psycho-emotionally unsafe, whatever it is. And I think about that as an org designer and what I could be doing to build into my, because the hierarchy is so prevalent in organizations, right? We've got leaders, we've got people in the middle, we've got people reporting to them, doing the work. What are we doing as designers to strip out some of that, what I consider to be inherent risk to psychological safety in the hierarchy?
Well, I would say that I have not seen in the research that hierarchy is always bad, but I would say bad hierarchy is always the worst biggest risk, right? So unfortunately, 70%, according to Gallup, 70% of leaders are terrible.
Right.
So we don't have a good data point to say.
Well, that's the data about the hierarchy, right? Leaders right. exist in hierarchy generally. I mean, yes. Leadership looks different in a flat organization, but I just wonder about it. And I wonder do we really need to do any research on it? Is the engagement research enough? But is there a
But I will say, doing? Having worked with a Thiel organization, right? Self-led organization. They had their own challenges, right? Same thing that Cynthia mentioned. Just because we're able to have a conversation doesn't mean I'm not bringing my bias. Remember our trauma numbers. We're bringing that to the table. I had a fight with my husband this morning. You know, I'm bringing that to the party. Like all these things show. So as humans, being able to understand and monitor and being self-aware enough to manage those stresses, that's where we get tripped up, even if it's in a peer-to-peer relationship. So I think there's still work to do. It's just slightly different work. And I can't hide behind a boss, right? So if I have to give you feedback as a peer, I can hide behind a boss in a hierarchy. I can't do that. So that's why they hired me to help them build the skills to give feedback in a low friction way.
Thank you.
You're welcome. looking at the comment, managers in the middle need our support because they own the relationships. How do we help them? The best place to help them, Molly, is to teach them how to take care of themselves. A well cared for leader is usually a pretty good leader. So being able to understand, here are some risks or some hazards that may come up for you, and let's build some skills so you know what to do when they happen. And also be nice to yourself for a hot minute. Stop beating yourself up.
Oh, I really liked the framework you had as we went through that. But one of the things I was thinking through it is there are some areas which are, if you want, clearly negative. So if you want, like bullying, there's no good bullying. But then there are other areas where in my mind it's actually more about balance or equilibrium. So things like deadlines or things like conflict or intercompany competition is almost on the performance curve. There's almost an understimulation and an overstimulation. We both know is bad, but there's an error in the middle where you get peak performance, which is a level of pressure, if you want, in the system. Is that something you would agree with?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's about not whether or not this hazard exists. We know these hazards exist. It's how high of a risk is it that it's going to negatively impact the mental health of our employees. So I think about it in the same way. I think about if I was run a company that was responsible for window washing skyscrapers, right? My health and safety plan wouldn't be just to tell people not to fall. I want to put in things in place that will help prevent them from falling, right? Like, I'm not just going to teach them about falling and how to land. I'm going to put things in place. So think about it the same way as we do around mental health and safety and psychological health and safety, is how do we equip people to understand the dangers and be able to navigate them? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Thank you.
Great. And we're at time.
We are. All right. Well, that was excellent. Thank you so much for your time and energy. Carlos, did you have anything you wanted to chime in as we wrap up here?
No, just want to extend my thanks to Alessandria for her expertise and her generosity with her time. And thank you all for participating. And if you're new to ODF, if this is your first time with us, this is one way we do things. We have lots of formats for these discussions. So I invite you to come back again and continue to join us and be part of this community. Thank you, Al. And thank you, Tanya, for your support.
Yeah, this was, I will send out a message. Diamond, I see your thing in the chat. I'll send out a message when I've got it posted to the website to all 75 or 80 of you who registered, and let you know when it's available. Should be in the next couple of days. We have another discussion on Thursday, our design dilemmas offering that we were gonna slip my mind. What's the topic for, where does organization design sit internally in companies? And so that's received a lot of interest. So I expect that to be another great conversation. And I just hit send on a coffee club, a little more casual meetup for next week on governance and decision making. So we have a busy month ahead and are excited to see which of you folks are going to be joining us at our conference.
Yes.
In May in Philadelphia. We've got people coming as far away from as Singapore and Brazil who've registered already, a couple coming in from Germany, and then always our strong North American US-based participants. Some more details about that is going to keep popping in your inbox in the next few weeks to hopefully get everybody back together again in a room for 2.5 days in early May.
All right.
So appreciate everybody's time. If you have any questions, I'll stay on the line for a couple of minutes.
There was one question about, will the slides be going out? Alessandria, will you be able to share your slides with us?
Yeah, I'll send a link to you.
Okay. Great.
Perfect.
Thanks.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone. Have a great rest of your
day. That's all. Al, hang around for a second. Tanya, can you hold it open for a second?
I can, absolutely. Yep.